When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey parents, Tim Wright here, along with Dr. Michael Gurian, the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. And a few episodes ago, we did a two-week look at a rescue plan for boys. And today we're going to talk about our daughters. We always feel like it's important for us to do both. But the issues are a little bit different. And that's why we're calling this Protecting the Emotional Lives of Our Daughters, which we'll talk more about in just a moment. Want to give a special call out to Man Cave. Men all need to be caring, actively engaged, vested, and encouraged. And their vision seeks to take a leadership role in encouraging positive relationships of fathers and male role models with their children. And so they promote the nurturing of fathers and mothers, parenting, and healthy marriages, and want to improve the lives of families and children as they do that. You can learn more at wonderofparenting.com, wonderofparenting.com. And there's a link where you can learn more about that. Michael. We are together. This is episode 297. We are just a few away from our 300th anniversary or 300th episode and 300th anniversary. Wow, that would be a long time. So today we're sort of diving back into the topic of girls. And we always feel it's really important when we talk about boys, which is always the most asked question, right?
Right.
It's always about boys. But that doesn't mean we don't care about girls. We do passionately. You raised two daughters. I raised a daughter. I've got two granddaughters. Let's start. We called our session on boys, our episodes on boys, a rescue plan for boys. That's not really the language you wanted to use in talking about our daughters. Why is that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it raises an interesting question, I think, because there are, we could have called this a rescue plan for girls, so that would have been no problem. But the reason that I suggested this protecting the emotional lives of girls rather than the rescue plan is that there are just so many, well, to go back to what we talked about in those sessions with boys, is there aren't any governmental agencies. You know, there is no White House Commission on Boys and Men. There's no state, none of the 50 states have a commission on boys and men. The White House and every state have multiple commissions on girls and women, and then broken down into certain areas like girls in STEM, girls, and mental health, digital, etc. But no government agencies on boys and men, and yet the issues that boys have in the world are certainly just as vast as the issues girls have. And in most of the developmental markers now in 2024, actually boys are doing worse than girls. So that's why those episodes and then my next book, which is Boys, a Rescue Plan, will come out in October, is called Boys, a Rescue Plan. And this isn't called Girls, a Rescue Plan, because what I'm trying to do is get people to realize that all our governments, our big three, academics, government, and media, have to rescue boys because they're in such trouble. So that's kind of a semantic thing. And that's why I asked for this to be called Protecting the Emotional Lives of Girls, because luckily, all these organizations, local level, state level, legislative level, federal level, exist to help girls. So luckily they do already exist. And they are helping to rescue our girls where our girls have need. They just don't exist for boys.
Right. At the same time, our girls are still struggling with their own stuff. And we've talked about this in various episodes. But I do want to, it's always good to talk about it again, because we get some new listeners and we need to hear it. And if we're raising daughters, we hear it as they grow. We hear it differently. Our girls are going through a time of increased stress and anxiety right now. A lot of reasons for that, but just kind of let's start. Give us an overview. What's going on?
Yeah, that's why I was asking for protecting the emotional lives of girls, because mental health, emotional life, this is where we really have concerns and worries about our girls, and where all of us as parents, grandparents, where we need help, and we need to protect them. The amount of depression and anxiety before, you know, the COVID lockdown and all that, COVID isolation, the amount of depression and anxiety among our girls was already, we would call it high. We've all been worried about this for decades. But then COVID and post-COVID, it's even higher. So we're looking at around 1 in 3, you know, that we would say are somewhere saying depression, you know, anxiety diagnosed or about to be diagnosed. And then some people are arguing around, actually it's around 40% are struggling, girls and women are struggling with a mental health issue.
Wow.
And that could be anorexia, bulimia, that could be anxiety. That's going to include the anxiety and depression. It's just high stress. And what we call COVID and post-COVID, a lot of that depression and anxiety is directly connected to screen time and digital use. So we have to track that and how much screen time. And we're going to talk about that today, because to some extent in 2024, to some extent, if we had to pick one single thing to try to help our girls with the amount of depression and anxiety they're experiencing and the high stress they're experiencing, it's going to relate to screens and screen time. So the screens and screen time are the other added element over the last 10 years, especially, that's creating even more of these mental health issues and disorders for girls, including this uptick in depression and anxiety.
So one of the areas that you've talked about before, and it's always good to come back to this, is the pressure on our daughters to multitask and to take on maybe more than they should. What's going on there in their biology that makes that unique for them?
Yeah, so I call that multitasking stress. And I think that everyone, but I'm going to now say women, can think about it and kind of process it, and they've felt it in themselves, where they're having to do so many different things at once. And so let's say they're raising their kids and there's their spouse, and then they're a ping comes in on, a notification comes in on their phone, and they move to that notification. But meanwhile, they're supposed to do this email, and then they've got the baby crying, and, you know, people get the scenario. So there's like 5 or 7 things going on at once, and they keep trying to adapt to each of those things. And that's multitasking stress. So they can identify it in themselves. Okay. So then when they're thinking about their daughters, it's good to try to observe their daughters and see, okay, how much are their daughters, involved in multitasking stress. They're doing their homework. Their laptop is open. Someone's communicating with them through the laptop. So they're trying to respond to that person. Then they're getting a notification on their phone. So they're responding to that person. They're supposed to be doing their math homework. So they're trying to do their math homework. Someone's talking to them. You know, there's some other task behind them, or they have to get to some other task. So they've got 4 or 5 tasks at any one time that they're trying to do. And the female brain has some a tendency here to get in some trouble anyway, because it's so white matter oriented, right? It's using so much more white matter. Female brain, girls and women are using about 10 times more white matter activity in their brains than boys and men. And white matter is what spreads function throughout the brain. So, and that's happening instantaneously throughout the brain, white matter. Boys, as we've talked about before, men, more gray matter oriented, they do certain things at certain times in certain splotches of the brain. And so they're not as prone to multitasking stress, because for them to do something, they generally have to do it in a gray matter area. It's a certain splotch. And while they can multitask and get multitasking stress, they're less have less of a proclivity to fall into multitasking stress because less white matter activity. So they're not naturally trying to do 7 things at once. And so this is a big area of vulnerability. And so the more this multitasking stress, right, the more likely the girl is to have depression and anxiety, because the multitasking stress puts such stress on the basic brain functions and on the brain centers, And so then at a certain point, the stress is going to be felt in the amygdala, and that amygdala is then going to send signaling elsewhere in the brain saying, hey, we got to go into survival mode here. This is too much stress. And so survival mode is very likely to become depression or anxiety, especially if it's going on for a long time.
Yeah. All right. So there's more we want to unpack. And of course, then we're going to talk about some strategies to help our daughters. You're listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. And we will be back in just a moment.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
So, Michael, you talked a bit about the brain stuff going on for our daughters, our girls, that can lead to some of the challenges in life. What about hormonally? What's going on?
Yeah, if any parent has seen their child change, in this case, your daughter change, like my daughter was this way, and now she's angry all the time. She's yelling at me all the time. She's very moody. Et cetera. You're seeing this. So some of it, you're probably asking yourself as a parent, well, is it, that now she's 11 or she's 12 or she's 13 and hormones are coming in? And yes, probably, that some of it is related to that. And if she has changed significantly, where you're starting to see, okay, now she's getting C's and D's in school. Now she's not socializing, she's isolating. Or she claims she's socializing, but she's doing it through her phone, which really isn't socialization, et cetera, then it could be not just normal hormone, but it's a combination of environment and the hormones could really be out of whack. And so it would be important to try to get her to, OBGYN or start with family physician and try to look at, is the progesterone, the estrogen, are they in balance? And, people all know about certain periods of the month, three or four days where it's like, oh man, you're okay. You're really moody right now. Well, everyone who's lived in a female body would go, okay, I get that, these three or four days. So we're not going to probably look for the imbalances for that. But if we're seeing this going on for a month or 2 months, then it's possible the hormones are not balanced kind of over the long term. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that happens here is that physicians will study it. It's not hard to discover. And then they'll say, okay, let's put her on the pill. That's just a common way that it's dealt with to try to get the progesterone and the estrogen back in balance. And then there are other ways. So at a baseline, the hormones can have an effect on depression and anxiety, especially if the depression anxiety starting at 9, 10, 11, pre-puberty and then moving into puberty, at a baseline, it can. And for it to become depressive disorder or anxiety disorder, we would probably say, let's look at the hormones. Let's try to get them rebalanced. See if that handles the depression anxiety. Then if it doesn't, of course, we're going to be looking at other factors like digital or trauma or something else.
And it's always important to say, one of the stereotypes of women is that they're just always emotional. We're talking stereotypes now. We used to get the really crass statements, well, it must be their time of the month and so on. But this is real biology when we're talking about our daughters and what their emotions, their hormones and so on can do both positively and negatively in their lives.
Yeah, there's the politics, as you've described, that, and also the stereotypes and all of that. And then there is what's actually going on inside our daughter. and for us as a, for a woman inside herself. And we definitely have to take that out of the politics, because the like I referred to 4 or 5 days a month or 3 or 4 days a month. Okay. That's not a stereotype. That's biology.
That's
and
right.
When we need to, if we think something's happening with our child, we're going to observe our child, right? We're going to be citizen scientists and observe our child to try to help them. And if we see this happening for 3 or 4 days a month, and you know, it's going to be very easy to, especially the mom talking to her daughter, probably the dad might not, but to find out, you know, what her cycle is. And then we can go, oh, okay, that's the cycle. That's 3 or 4 days a month. That's that cycle. Okay. And then we're going to just factor that in, inculcate that into our parenting, because we're going to understand it. And we're going to, you know, we're not going to have to go get some hormonal interventions or something like that. So we factor that in, and it's biology. And then also, we have to watch for the politics, because sometimes people will not even want to talk about it, right? Because they're into this political framing that if you talk about female biology, you're obstructing them or you're patriarchal or whatever it is. And then they won't talk about it. And then this child is in these mood swings for a month or 2 months or 3 months, and they won't talk about the hormones. And so that's wrong also. We have to take care of our kids and marshal all the assets we have. And one of the assets we have is studying their hormonology. I beg people not to get involved in whatever that we would call that, the gender politics of hormones. Hormones are part of who we are. They can get out of whack for boys and girls. For girls, let's talk for a minute about what you said about emotions. For girls, yes, a girl in a given day, just like a woman in a given day, on average, is processing more emotions than a boy on a given day and a man on a given day. Why? Because 9 areas of the brain, of the female brain, are set up to process emotions. Only 2 areas of the male brain are set up to process emotions. How do we know that? Because we do brain scans of boys and girls and women and men who, and we give them emotive material, and we watch what parts of the brain light up. Right. And in females, it's 9 areas, and in males, it's 2 areas. So yes, it was an old stereotype and kind of reprehensible. We don't need that stereotype anymore. That harms women. In other words, keeps women out of certain things because you're too emotional. Yeah, we don't do that anymore. But it's true that women are processing more emotions, and that any woman and any girl living in their own brain and body, who's also living with brothers and husband or men, they know the difference. Everyone knows the difference. You know, they know they're processing a lot of emotions constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's actually true. And so one of the reasons that, and again, we're averaging, there's going to be some guy, some boy who processes more emotions than his sister. Absolutely. We're averaging. But why is it important to talk about? Because part of why girls and women can be more prone toward overt depression and more prone toward anxiety disorders is because of that emotionality, because their brains are so constantly processing emotion. And we've talked on this program about rumination loops. And rumination loops are where the female brain is more prone to these because they're processing emotive stimuli, and then they ruminate on it. And the rumination goes on for hours, day, 2 days, 3 days, a week. And one of the easiest ways to talk about this sort of publicly is something that everyone will recognize again, which is that most boys don't hold on to things as long as most girls. And I don't know any girl or woman that doesn't know this. Most boys finish something. So the joke that we often make is, yeah, they get mad at each other, and then they go wrestle out on the playground or whatever, and then they're done, right? Okay. And very often that's true. Yes, boys hold grudges, but very often, you know, you do research and you do 100,000 sample size and you observe and watch and you see that, yeah, most of those guys are not holding grudges as long as the 100,000 girls that you had in your sample size. And that's because the girls are ruminating. They're processing more and they're ruminating. And so they can hold on to stuff for a week, a month, a year, 2 years, 10 years in ways that a lot of boys and men wouldn't do. And that's simply brain biology. And it's also then one of the reasons that they're so much more prone toward overt depression and toward anxiety disorders. So boys have depression, boys have anxiety disorders, but we're talking statistically, girls are more prone, and they're more prone because of the way their brains are set up. So if we don't look at this, and we'll talk about it when we get to practical strategies, if we don't accept and understand this, that this is real, it's going to be harder for us to protect the emotional lives of our girls, because we're going to be thinking in a kind of political frame, and we're going to miss what's actually going on in them, that they are processing more emotion and they need more help from us to protect that, and to help them to stop processing all those emotions at the appropriate time, to stop processing all these emotions, you know, and to move on, because the processing of all these emotions is part of why they get so anxious and they get more depressed.
You're listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting with Tim Wright and Michael Gurian. And we're going to take a quick break and come back and look at some strategies to help us protect the emotional lives of our daughters. Michael, before we talk strategies, just give us some insight into what's going on in the digital lives of our daughters.
Yeah. Well, and this we will return to this in strategies. So all the screen time, so TikTok, social media are really great examples, but also just all the screen time itself, 6 to 8 hours in front of screens. So that's having a profound effect on the brain. And one of the things that it's doing for girls specifically, and by the way, I can refer people to the Minds of Girls if you want a lot more of this, just everything on girls, but also this point, the chapter on digital. So one of the things it's doing is that they're getting hit with an emotive cue, you know, every 30 seconds or every 60 seconds. And TikTok's the easiest one because they're like 60 seconds. So they're getting hit with an emotive cue, and they're watching, let's say they're watching TikTok or interacting with TikTok 2 or 3 hours, right? So they're getting hundreds of these emotive cues to their brains. So the dopamine is flashing, right? And it's flashing through into reward centers of the brain, or they get a negative emotional hit, you know, and then they're not getting a positive dopamine hit. What they're getting is a fight or flight response to it, amygdala response to it. And that's happening hundreds of times in a given day.
Wow.
And it's too much. So it's just too much for their brains. It's too much for any brain, by the way, male, female, anybody, but also for girls, because of the way their brains are set up, they're going to take in that emotive hit and they're going to try to move that through the brain and get more other parts of the brain involved, you know, and then of course get into rumination loops. And that's hundreds per day. So this is why the House committee is studying this, and why people are looking at banning TikTok, or having no social media for kids until they are 16, which is difficult to enforce. But the reason, it is. But our takeaway as parents can be that, okay, we ought to do that with our child, one child at a time. You know, no smartphones until they're 14, you know, or enter high school. Love to see it later, but that's probably realistic. 13, 14 entering high school, no smartphones, and then limited access to internet and to TikTok and all of this through computers and pads. And then hopefully no TikTok for these kids until at least their high school age or older. And that is something that will protect the emotional lives of girls. That's one thing every parent can do to protect the emotional lives of their daughters.
All right. So we've talked about that strategy, which is not easy. Right. Every parent will say it's not easy, but we have more and more research all the time that just says this is really crucial. And we're almost at a crisis point where we've got to act in terms of really limiting our kids' access to that stuff. How do we help our kids? And you've said some of this, but how do we help with the issue of multitasking?
Yeah. Okay. Well, the digital, I tell you what, a lot of the multitasking stress is connected to them having pads, phones, laptops, et cetera, open, right, and all of that. So some of the multitasking stress is going to go away When we get rid of that, and I'm now going to include strategically schools, schools ought to ban the smartphones, cell phones, all day. So kids cannot have those devices during the day. And a few schools in the country, a few more every month, are doing that and starting to build momentum on that. And so that's another strategy that will help. And it will help with all the stuff described with digital anxiety, depression. It'll also help with multitasking stress, which will help to cut back on anxiety and depression. Okay, so then beyond the digital, with multitasking, I'm really in favor of just one or two strong activities plus schoolwork that kids are involved in. Obviously, schoolwork is important, but then just one or two, not four or five activities. So we'll pick an age, a 10-year-old. So, you know, well, everyone should nurture the nature of their child. You know, you be a citizen scientist on your own child. But the basic advice I would give is probably not. We don't want the child to be doing, I'm going to make things up, horseback riding and piano lessons and athletics. And, you know, obviously schoolwork is important. And, right, you see where I'm going. Yep. And they should be taking Chinese language so that they're smarter, you know, when they're 20. And they, right, we want to get them focused on one or two. And I, like with my daughters, you know, we had them in, they were in martial arts. They were in soccer for a while as their athletic. And then as they drifted away from that, they were in martial arts. So that was the physical. Because I suggest looking at three areas, the physical, the social, emotional, and then the cognitive. So the schoolwork is generally most of the cognitive. Mm-hmm. And then the physical was, you know, soccer. And then one of them went out for tennis for a year, and then martial arts. Those are all in the physical category. And they kind of alternated that depending on the season. And then the social, emotional. So another activity is going to involve socializing with others. Obviously some of that's play dates, but our kids were in Girl Scouts. So that was one way to do that. So what are they doing? They're doing one that's physical. They're doing one that's cognitive, and they're doing one that's social emotional, because those are the three sort of developmental building blocks for kids. And then, okay, if that's going well, then we could expand out. Okay, let's add, they really have an interest in, I said horseback riding. They really have an interest in horses. Okay, let's nurture that nature. Yeah, okay, let's follow that. We'll add horses, and then we'll see how it does with their other activities. And then if now they don't want to play soccer because they're doing horses, that's okay, right? We don't have to multitask them into 5 or 10 things. We're moving that physical energy toward horses. And that truly, I think, is the best way to help our girls get out of the multitasking stress from trying to do too many things at once and being forced by us into doing too many things at once.
You have a lot of this in your book, The Minds of Girls, and with some great research to back it up. Let's talk about one more part of the emotional life of our daughters, and that has to do with sleep, which seems to be a tough topic for our kids these days. They're not getting as much as they need. How much does a daughter need, say, when she's in elementary school and high school? And how do we help them get a better sleep?
Okay. So the different age groups, we would look at the different age groups. I mean, she's going to probably be only getting 8 to 9 hours by the time she's in high school, even though we would love her to have 9 to 10, actually. But because of her body growing the way it is, but she's probably 8 to 9, good uninterrupted sleep, you know, REM sleep, et cetera. Earlier years, actually, they could be getting 10 hours and that would be fine. You know, at 5, 6, 7 years old, that'd be great. In terms of how to help them, the best way is to set up sleep rituals and routines. So like, you know, let's say 7-year-old, you're going to go to bed at 8:30. Okay, great. Set up that ritual and routine. Do all your rituals for that, like reading aloud, you know, and cuddling with them in bed and reading aloud, you know, do all the rituals, all really good. And then time to go to sleep. That's it. It's time to go to sleep. So unless they have some significant anxiety disorder or something else, you know, that's it. You go to sleep. You cry for 5 minutes. That's fine. You still go to sleep. And no devices. Because remember, right. The thing that is ruining kids' sleep in the last 20 years is devices. So no devices in their rooms for an hour before bed, you know, and so no engagement or addiction to those devices, no devices that they're sneaking into and playing their video games, you know, in the closet, like none of that. You get rid of the devices and you have sleep routines, the kids will start sleeping again. And I say start sleeping again, because when you and I were kids, we didn't have these interruptive elements. Right. So while a particular child could have had some trouble with sleep, we were getting the basic amounts of sleep we were supposed to get. And because we didn't have the interruptions, and then the only interruption, quote unquote, would be if we were doing an activity before school. So we would get up to go do band or get up to go do right, whatever it was. We're getting, however, the REM sleep and all the sleep we needed between 8 and if we were going to have to get up at 6 to do school stuff, right, we would go to bed at 8 and we would get all the REM sleep that we needed in that time period. So if your kid's listening, your kid has to get up at 6 to do something like band, like I had to as a kid. Okay, that's all right. They should go to bed earlier and they should have no interruptive devices. They'll still get their sleep. But if they have to get up at 6 and they're, say, 12 years old, 13 years old, they have to get up at 6 to get to school, to get to the bus, whatever it is, then they absolutely should go to bed earlier. That means they're going to need to go to bed at 9 and be falling asleep by 9 because we really want that 9 hours for them.
And they need to be off the screen for at least an hour prior to that.
Yeah. And the only exception would be a Kindle that doesn't right. use the blue light, et cetera. So yeah, that'd be the only exception. That's correct.
Yeah. Well, a lot of good stuff. Again, you've got more of this in the minds of girls. And Michael, thank you so much. Always really good to get your insights on this.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for us doing this topic. We both have the daughters, and now you have granddaughters, and I have a granddaughter on the way. So
congratulations.
Very important.
Yeah. She'll have you wrapped around her little finger before she even comes out of that womb. So yeah, very cool. Well, I know that you're going to keep us up to speed on all of that. So in the weeks to come, we're going to hear more about Grandpa Gurian. Stay tuned. Wonder Parenting Podcast. We're glad to have you with us. You can go to our Facebook page and you can hit join, and we'll help. We'll allow you in. Some great discussion there. WonderParenting.com is our website. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks everyone.